Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to Orlando Entrepreneurs. My name is Josh, and I'm your host of this conversation. And in today's episode, we're having a conversation with Chance and Justin on the founding team of Doghead Simulations. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Chance and Justin to the show.
Thanks for having us.
How's it going?
Yeah, good. So we're going to have a conversation with Chance, who came up with the idea and who's building this company. Chance, why don't you tell us what Doghead Simulations is?
So Doghead Simulations is a fully distributed company. We make software called Rumi. It's R-U-M-I-I. And it is VR conferencing for education and enterprise. So imagine, you know, we've had a lot of years of using video conferencing, you know, Skype and FaceTime and all that. And it hasn't really evolved much. You know, the bandwidth has gotten a little better, so the resolution is a little better. But in general, you just don't feel like you're there with people. And so the way that Doghead came about, or the way that Rumi came about, is that Albert Perez and I were working on a prototype for a VR game called Beartender. It was actually an animal bartending game. And I was based in Rio de Janeiro, and he was in Seattle. And we were working on this prototype, and we were trying to do some Skyping, but I had, I think, like 5 megabit down speed, or like 3 sometimes. The internet in Rio was not very good. And so we were having a lot of issues communicating, and we didn't feel like we were on the same team. We felt very, you know, separate in different places. And our CEO, Matt Chacon, said, "Hey, you guys should fix that problem using VR." I was like, "Yeah, we can make a tool to, like, resolve this." And so Albert started messing around with some stuff, and our tool to fix our communication problems became our product. So,
nice.
You know, the cool thing about VR is that you're not sending a video, so there's a lot less bandwidth. You know, we're sending audio, and we're sending the XYZ coordinates of your hands and your head, you know, for the body language. And so we can have, you know, say like 30 people in the same room talking to each other. So,
well, that's pretty cool. So as you guys were solving a problem that you guys had for yourself, you were in different parts of the world working on an animal bartending game,
yes,
right? and you found that there was some limitations with Skype or FaceTime. And
yeah,
you created a tool using VR, virtual reality. You created a tool which allows you guys to feel like you're actually working together.
Yeah, the great thing about VR technology is it's gotten so good that our subconscious brain is actually buying into the idea that you've gone somewhere else, right? And this is just the first, you know, the first or second generation of VR. Imagine, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years from now, where it's going to be. You know, we're basically looking at the very beginning of the Matrix.
Nice. So you created this tool. It started to solve this problem. You guys actually felt like you were serving, you know, drinks with animals.
Yeah. Basically, like a sloth would come in all slow. "I want a Red Bull and vodka, please."
Yeah.
So then you grab the Red Bull. You know, it's all in VR. You pour it. You put the ice. You serve it to him. And then maybe a gorilla comes in, and then he gets drunk, and he's like causing problems, but he leaves good tips, so you keep serving him alcohol. It's just a big madhouse of drunk animals.
Yeah, sounds like.
But imagine meeting like VCs, you know, trying to pitch, "Hey, I've got this tool that'll revolutionize the way that we communicate and do education across countries." Or, "Hey, you want to get wasted with a giraffe?" Like, imagine trying to pitch those ideas to investors. It's just a much different situation.
Yeah. Well, Justin, as we're having this conversation, you know, like, talk to us a little bit about your role in the company and where do you see us going? And by the way, those listening in, right now we're sitting in a classroom in Full Sail University in Winter Park, Florida. We're sitting in a conference room to actually visit their studios and to see the virtual reality. Like, I just got to play on it, and it was incredible. So, Justin, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, your role, and what you see?
Yeah, so I joined up with Doghead. I've known Chance and Albert for a very long time, and they started this, you know, this crazy company that they were working with, as Chance mentioned. They just asked me to be a part of it, and I thought it was really interesting because the vision of where this can go, as Chance mentioned, we're on the tippy, like we're just at the beginning of this, right? VR is still kind of cumbersome, and it's working to getting much more. Oculus Go just came out. You're starting to see a much more accessible product, right, that more people are going to have. So looking at that future and then the problems that they were solving, like, this is really, really interesting. And I've been teaching here at Full Sail for about 15 years now. So I instantly saw the merit of using this, specifically with online education. I've been doing that for as long as, you know, they've been doing it here. And you do get, you know, you do definitely miss the student-teacher interaction. And the students miss the peer-to-peer interaction also, right? They don't, their emails, they're sometimes even in like in Skype or in GoToMeeting, you know, you kind of get those Brady Bunch squares where it's like, you just, you don't know who's talking to who, there's no eye contact, there's very little presence. And I even feel that with my online students. Some of them are just, you know, they're just names and emails sometimes. And so looking at what they were doing here, you could see the merit, and it's a very, very interesting project. So I started working in dev, but I've switched to more focusing on how to make this viable in education by using it in the classroom and kind of getting the growing pains out. And so in doing that, you those things I just mentioned, the presence, it's amazing to see a group of students or a group of online students specifically come in and for the first time be able to address them and have eye contact with them and gesture your hands. And when they ask a question, you can walk right up to them and say, you, like, you're a person I'm addressing. It's very hard to quantify how much that helps a student attach themselves to the class or attach themselves to the teacher or gain respect for what they're doing, because they're not just an email and they're not just they're actually a part of something in there. And as Chance mentioned, they get to go into a classroom. So this virtual classroom, the feeling of not sitting, I've worked at home before, right? And working at home, if you're just sitting in the same spot, it might be your living room, right? If you're working in your living room all the time, you're not getting that same juice that comes in with going to a new spot that's dedicated to learning in this place with other people. And you can kind of go there in Roomie, and you can talk to other people gesture and eye contact and address and presence. So that's one amazing thing about that I see, where this really goes above and beyond the 2D stuff that we have right now. The other thing is what I found doing this is there are certain topics that are actually just better served in this new amazing place that we're in, because we're not in the real world, right? We're in, if I want to make a Ferrari pop up, I can load it up and snap my fingers and I have a Ferrari right there, right? If I want a dragon in the middle of the room, if I want to put us on the beach, if I want to go to, all these things are possible. And most people thinking about teaching right now, the big struggle is get away from just using the slides and using the videos. We can do amazing things now. And I'm finding that some of my lessons, even my on-campus students, it's better served to teach these lessons in this place, because so I may have them sitting in the classroom with VR goggles on, even though they're brick and mortar here, they're not online, but teaching certain concepts like 3D concepts, like vectors and just the tools I have in this and the possibilities that we have, and specifically because I'm so close to the dev team, we can just go, wouldn't it be cool if we could do this? And you can get really amazing stuff done. So, while we're in the infancy of the technology, we're also in the infancy of the mindset of what do we do in this space? Because education for so long has been on a projector. It's been watching a movie. It's been writing on a whiteboard or a chalkboard for back in the day, right? It's been there for so long that you get freedom paralysis. Like, what, you mean I can do anything? It's like, yeah, you can. If you can think it, you can probably get it done somehow. But the work to get it done is what's going to challenge new instructors and even new people in biz dev, right? Thinking about how to do this, no one's there yet. We're just getting there. And perfecting this is going to be a really interesting journey and a really interesting road I was just really interested to be a part of. So, I think in education and in biz dev, this is going to definitely change the way we do things.
I was in your old studio, and I put on the headgear. I had these controllers in my hand, and it immediately took me where I was in a conference room. And I just want to paint this picture for those listening in. I was in a conference room or in an auditorium, and I changed my background from Mars to an aquarium. And in front of me, I clicked on a button, and up popped a human heart, probably this, you know, a 15-foot human heart,
right.
And it was pumping. And I could walk around the heart, and I could spin the heart, I could scale it, I could see the arteries, but it allowed me to see it right in front of me. I could draw on it, I could move it. So, I mean, that was such a, you know, from my background in emergency medicine, like that, being able to see a heart that big, that close, like all the things that I learned from a book, which is a stagnant picture of a heart, like I got to see it pumping blood.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like what other places do you see virtual reality like impacting the education space of the future?
But think about like a lot of the stuff that frustrates people in just mathematics is you have to imagine it, right? A lot of the outcomes of math is you can't see it. You can't see what's actually happening there, specifically applicable math, right? Once you're in 3D, you can draw things and connect with someone in a way that they can't step through and walk around in this space and say, look, this connects with this and this connects with this.
Up until now, you know, teachers have been forced to draw 3D concepts on a 2D plane, right?
Yeah.
And so now we can step out of that 2D plane and actually show 3D concepts in a 3D world, and it clicks a lot.
And even think about, you know, architecture and just walking around these spaces. I mean, where we're in right now, I teach in game design and development, right? There's a ton of applications that we can use. But as I mentioned, the challenge is having everyone get excited and not think about... The low-hanging fruit is come into this space, use it as a conference room. I mean, we can put the slides up there, we can put the movie up there, but come in here and really think about what you've been missing and when you learned it. You have to go back to even what when you learned it, how could this have been better? I definitely see mathematics, people getting more engaged in mathematics, being able to visualize it and actually play it in that world. Science, I mean, as you mentioned, biology.
History.
Right?
History. You can go to Israel and do photogrammetry of a, you know, ancient temple or something and have a class, history class inside that temple, you know.
Yeah.
You could even have you could have animated, you saw the heart was animating, right?
Yeah.
So like, you know, if you really want to recreate the beaches of Normandy or something like that and have characters animating through there and doing stuff and, you know, pausing that and saying this was this. If someone took the time to do it. Now, content creation is another issue, right? Someone making that in a realistic, modeling the beach, animating all the characters, doing all that stuff, those are large tasks. So, you know, that's part of the growing pains of this and the pipeline that needs to be looked at is we can do all these amazing things, but it's not always going to be a snap.
Yeah.
Just snap your fingers, right?
More content. Yeah.
I think you're going to see companies that are going to specifically start doing that stuff because that content creation is going to be a large job. So there's opportunities there too. But when I say that most of the things that we've thought of just sitting around talking or bringing stuff up, it's never completely come up to the thing where it's like, man, we probably couldn't do that. It's like, yeah, if we had the team to put it together,
yeah,
we could probably
artists,
pop it in there.
Designers, yeah.
Because Roomies, it's a platform, right?
Yeah.
It's a platform for amazing things to happen, just to get together and do these amazing things. And in that platform, we can even think it. We can probably get it together.
So Roomy is a product of Doghead Simulations, and it allows the participants to put on this headgear and to enter into a virtual reality space where they're in the business world. It's maybe sales or corporate training. In the education space, it could be, you know, learn about the heart or learn about the brain or learn about history. So really, if you can think it up, you guys can...
It's technically possible. If you can think of it, we can probably make it. I guess with VR, the limitations right now would be like haptic feedback, like actual physical feedback. Obviously, if you see a cat in the middle of the room, if you go there and pet, you're not going to feel a cat unless you place the cat in the exact same spot, right?
Yeah.
So that's the biggest limitation of the VR. But from a visual standpoint, pretty much anything that you can think of visually can be done.
I mean, you just went into a concert, right? You just watched a concert in VR?
Yeah, yeah. It was like on the go, the Oculus Venues, and basically it's like a 180 video, and then the front half of 180 is a video. The back half is a 3D model with like avatars of other people that are watching the band play, and you can talk to the people next to you. And,
That's pretty cool.
So what's unique about Roomie, though, is, you know, while everyone is doing social VR for hanging out, meeting people, you know, for leisure activities, we're one of the only companies, or at least at this level, at least maybe the only company that's focusing strictly on productivity, education, training, getting stuff done, you know, rather than a place you walk in and just meet strangers. You know, actually, we're the opposite. You have to create a team and then invite people to that team. So when you go into your office, you know that only people that have been invited to your Roomie team are going to be in there. So you're not going to be harassed by some random person.
And the tools are specifically made for that productivity, right? I mean, there's some funsies tools in there, but you need to have funsy kind of features in it, right? But the tools are made for productivity. And we've gone through iterations of this tool's working, this tool's not working. Like, you know, you had the Jira integration for a while. And so, you know, through iteration and stuff like that, we're finding what tools are cumbersome, but they all are focused towards some type of education or business productivity. What do we use when we're trying to communicate and have these meetings? And it's really perfect for, like, you know, there's pros and cons to that, right? So in a classroom, I want your attention. What's great is having this virtual reality is I have your attention. You're not doing, you're basically blindfolded with my classroom. Yeah. So you're not alt-tabbing to something else. You're not like, you're here to do something. Same within a meeting. You could say, I want your attention. You're not browsing your phone on Facebook, right? But, you know, then there's the other side of that where people can feel uncomfortable that they're disconnected as much from what they are. But you definitely have, they got nothing else to do but watch you at that point in time. So that's a cool part.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is really interesting. And, you know, I love seeing the work that you guys are doing here with Full Sail and in the future of education and training. Chance, how did you come up with, you know, we saw how you came up with the initial idea. How did it move to now, in, you know, doing some work with Full Sail, and what was that progression? How did that happen?
Yeah, so the reason a lot of us are here in Orlando is, so Albert and I, both Full Sail graduates. I graduated in 2000, like January 2001, and he was like maybe 2006-ish.
Probably six.
Albert and I were inducted to the Hall of Fame here at Full Sail, and so I would come back every year to talk to students, just to give back to students in the community, and so we'd hang out, you know, every year for several years, and we ended up being in Germany at the same time for Gamescom, which is like E3 for Europe, and that's where we came up with the idea to do the bartender thing, right? Mm-hmm. So when we came back here, we showed some of the owners of Full Sail, and they were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, look what you can do for education. And Full Sail's always been very cutting edge with technology, like they're leaders when it comes to using technology, so they're like, let's start using this. I was like, that's right, let's start doing stuff from Ready Player One before the movie's out. Yeah, so they're actually doing online classes in VR here before Ready Player One was released in the theaters, which is funny because they have the same deal. But yeah, so it made a great partnership because, you know, over 3/4 of our team has worked in education at some point in their life, many of them now, and they hooked us up with a nice space, you know, a place to do demos, and so it's good for both parties. You know, it's a great partnership.
Nice. Now, you mentioned that you graduated here from Full Sail, but you're also in the Hall of Fame for Full Sail. Why don't you kind of give me and the audience a view as how you got started as an entrepreneur? Like, what does that look like to be in the Hall of Fame at Full Sail?
Well, my first company, I mean, that I was part of was, you know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years after, like 2 years after graduation. So I worked on this game called Medal of Honor Allied Assault. You remember the little Medal of Honor games?
Yeah, Medal. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
So I worked on, my first game was Allied Assault, which was the PC version, right? Mm-hmm. And then 22 of us left, and we formed a new company called Infinity Ward, and had to create a franchise that would compete with Medal of Honor, and that's where we came up with Call of Duty. So we worked on the very first Call of Duty game, and then Call of Duty 2, and then Modern Warfare, or Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, Modern Warfare 2, Modern Warfare 3, and I quit after Call of Duty Ghosts. Now, I was had a small chunk of Infinity Ward, but they sold the company before Call of Duty 1 was released, so you can imagine how horrible of a buyout price that was compared to other, yeah, it's like $7 billion later, Activision. You know, like, but hey, it's, you know, just to be part of that was awesome, you know. And then after working on Call of Duty for so long and going to Brazil, I was like, I want to work for myself now. I don't want to go work for another company. And it's just a perfect time to start a startup.
Nice. Why did you go to? So you had this. You were on the starting team. You were working, you know, Allied Assault, and then you switched over to start up a group with some friends and some people that you knew, and you guys built the Call of Duty
franchise,
right? So, like, talk to us about that switch from, you know, the Allied Assault to Call of Duty. Like, what was that look like? And then, you know, tell us about forming that.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that is, you know, Medal of Honor was EA, it was Electronic Arts, mm-hmm. and then Call of Duty was Activision. But Activision wanted us to make another World War II game using the exact same engine we had just made Medal of Honor with. But everything we had added to that engine, to the Quake 3 engine, and just for the people that are listening that aren't into gaming, an engine is basically all the 3D graphics you see and everything that happens in the game, the engine is what powers it, right? Mm-hmm. And so we had to start over and redo a lot of the same stuff we'd already done because we didn't own it, you know? The bad thing about that is that we had to do stuff again. The good thing is that we're able to do it faster and better. And when you are in the software, there's something called legacy code. Like, let's say you have an app you've developed over 6 years, and then you realize, oh, there's this code, this line of code we put in 5 years ago that we need to take out. If we take it out, everything falls apart, right? And so you end up with that over a, you know, in any kind of software product sometimes, so we're able to fix those issues and just do a better job than we did with Medal of Honor.
Right on. So you guys built this, you had the company itself, the franchise was acquired, and you decided to go to Brazil.
Yeah, I just needed to recover from, you know, 60 hours a week of game development over many years, you know.
Yeah.
Not always 60, but, you know, a lot of hours, a lot of sitting in front of a computer. I love technology, but I don't want to sit in front of a computer 10 plus hours a day. So I went to Brazil to recover.
Awesome. So when you were in Brazil, what kind of work were you doing there, or just kind of?
I was consulting a little bit, but for the most part, I was just relaxing.
Yeah, just
consulting, and then started, you know, Doghead when I was in Rio, and Albert was still in Seattle. And so it just eventually made sense to come back to the States and get a little more serious about it.
Excellent. So, Justin, here comes Chance coming back, you know, from Brazil. And you guys, how did you guys meet and how did you guys decide to work together?
I've known Chance for a while just through, like I said, I've been here at Full Sail for a very long time. And he's been Hall of Fame, so I've known
him. Yeah, we were never, like, super close friends until we started working together.
Right.
More of, like, we had all the same friends and we'd see each other at least once a year kind of deal.
It was mostly Albert. So Albert, yeah. Since I said I'm old here, Albert was one of my students a long time ago, long, long time ago. And so I don't even remember the date actually happened, but he said he's getting into this thing and do you want to be a part of it? And I think they kind of, it was much more focused on biz dev at the time instead of education. It just kind of organically happened. You know, you stay tight with people come here. Full Sail's really great about grads that want to be a part of this coming back, and so both these guys were always coming back in and just stayed in touch with them. And for some reason, they wanted me hanging around the team. And that's what I've just been doing. I've just been hanging around and being part of it because it is a really cool... It's a cool product. It's on the cutting edge of, you know, there might be some other things that do similar things, but being on the cutting edge and being able to talk about this and iterate with it, looking where the hardware is going to go, and being on the forefront of the mindset of the process of using it, right? Because again, I think we're so. We're so naive and so immature about how we can use this stuff you saw that everyone with VR, you know, everyone was going entertainment. Mm-hmm. Everything was like, this is going to be a cool entertainment tool, when they asked me to be a part of it, I think I just had some vision to where it was going to go, and I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. So I just stuck around.
Nice. So Chance, where's the business currently at in terms of, you know, what stage are you guys at in your business?
We're towards the end of our seed, I guess we could say that. We've launched on, Oculus Rift, HTC Vive, Vive Pro, Windows MR. We're on Android. We just launched on the Oculus Go.
Steam.
And Steam. You know, Steam on PC.
Yeah.
So right now we're just trying to hit as many distribution channels as we can to get as much exposure as we can, because we don't have, you know, we're not going to drop, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in marketing at this point as a new startup. So just getting distribution, getting our name out there, a lot of social media, just traveling to various expos, events, doing talks.
Lots of demos.
Demos on demos.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Where do you guys see, you guys are finishing up your seed, you guys are in production, you actually have product out in the marketplace where people can get and experience it. Where do you see, you know, as your next steps as you guys are building this out?
Next steps, we've kind of got to the point where we've got all the features that we need to replicate a real life classroom, right? The things you can already do in a classroom. Now I think from a product standpoint, we're looking at more of the features of things you can't do in real life, like the 3D line drawer that you used, or the 3D model loader. Hopefully in the future, being able to record the actual meetings that occur and revisit the meetings as if you were there for the first time in VR, right? Mm-hmm. So trying to get those extra features in there that are going to blow people's minds away. Like, wow, I could never do this in a real classroom or a real meeting.
Actual exploding high fives.
Yeah, exploding high fives.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
All professors need
Exploding high fives, yeah.
Wow, man, that's good. So you guys here in Orlando, Florida, as Orlando Entrepreneurs, you're building out, you know, this amazing company that's going to really revolutionize education, the way business is done, the way meetings are done in the future. What advice do you guys have? You know, maybe each of you could give some advice. Justin being an instructor, Chance being an entrepreneur, like, and both being entrepreneurs, like, what is some advice that each of you come for other startups just getting started in their business, maybe building a game or some type of virtual reality business?
Raising money always takes way longer than you expect it to be. It's like, right when you think you're a few weeks away, you'll be lucky if you're a few months away. Keeping it tight at first, you know, small group, lean, as they call it, and people you trust, you know, because when you're dealing with an idea that could, you know, I guarantee you that if it's not us, hopefully it's us, someone's going to have a $1 billion+ exit doing basically what Roomy does. Mm-hmm. And the goal is for that to be us first, right?
Sure.
So you have to realize that, yeah, at the beginning your company might not have tons of actual, you know, real street value, but you know that if you get to that point, you know, having a percentage of a company, a half percentage, a 0.1% is going to be a lot of money, right? So yeah, that creates interesting relationships, you know. So you got to make sure the people you work with you trust.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you've known for a while, or other people you've worked with know them for a while.
Yeah. What about you, Justin? What advice do you have out there?
Very similar. When he says keep it tight, be realistic. Scope your project down to something, you know, your MVP, your minimum viable product. Like, scope that down to something that you know you can. It's easy to get lost in the romance of this amazing thing that's going to happen, right? And I have been on a lot of projects and a lot of things where we've always had that in mind and we've been looking toward that, but getting that small-scoped victory of actually getting something done and working, make sure you put those milestone victories out in front of you with small scope, especially when you're starting off. And he said raising money is difficult. It is very difficult. So the great thing about making a game or making software like this is it has very little overhead to begin with. If you have a computer and you have the ability, you know, a group of people who are just using sweat equity, doing their own programming, doing their own art, doing their own design, it's amazing what you can get done. So, you know, keep your scope small. Don't necessarily go looking for venture cap or like funding until you know you have something that can that you can start working with, and then trust and all the things. Yeah. All the things Chance said.
The great thing about Roomy is, you know, we've pitched to investors inside of Roomy.
That's pretty cool.
So, yeah, and imagine how well that sells the product. I mean, hey, did this pitch work? Did it function? Like, if we had a, you know, even if they didn't buy into all the details of the pitch, if they're there listening, have a conversation with you, you're showing them your slides, you're highlighting things, you've already proved your point. You could talk about Galapagos turtles for an hour, and they still might invest in you because they've been using your product the whole time.
Yeah.
And that, and you know, Full Sail, we have this office here in Full Sail, but before that happened, we were completely remote. So removing, the interesting way to remove overhead is we didn't have to have a, you know, we didn't have an electric bill to pay. We didn't have an office that we had to deal with because the product that we were making was pretty much our office, which is kind of unique to this product. But still being smart about that, don't go out with your startup business and and go find a 1,000-square-foot office that you need to rent
in Silicon Valley
to start building overhead before you have anything coming in, right? You know, this is specifically with software. It's pretty easy to do with the low overhead. But, yeah, scope, be realistic, be honest with yourself. Look at the team that you have and see what they can accomplish. Get something up and running before you start making big moves like that.
Yes, something really cool about, we talked about this in our office a little bit, unique to Roomy, or at least most social VR, is if we look at society today, at least in the, well, most of the world, but at least let's take, for example, here in the United States, we're very divided politically. You go on Facebook, it's just people arguing, it's an echo chamber, you know, everyone's just listening to what they want to hear, and the conversations are horrible. You look at any discussion, it quickly turns into aggression, people arguing, because what social media has done, and I'm a huge fan of social media, but I understand its faults, is it's boiled down the human, down to just letters and words, right? And so we have a conversation with someone, you're just reading the data they give you, there's no facial expression, there's no body language, there's no human behind that, like from what you can see. And so what in Roomy, what we've done is when you are in VR, you're in a three-dimensional space, you feel like you're there with other people, you're seeing other people's body languages, we were actually rehumanizing social media, right?
Yeah.
Because now we're adding those human traits back into social media and recreating what we're used to in real life. And you don't, you know, I've done a lot of social VR experiences, not just in Roomy, but people don't quickly get into political arguments. People get along. Like I was hanging out with, like I was telling you, I was talking to a Dominican baseball player, a guy from Texas, and a woman from Iran, like just in a VR social setting. And everyone's getting along, you know. It's not like the guy from Texas will like, get out of my room, you know. It's like, hey, oh, Iran, where, like, tell me about where you're from. And she brought up photos and, like, you know, and the baseball player is talking about, you know, playing in, like, double-A baseball with the Tigers. Like, all these people are experiencing different, they're talking about different experiences that you'd probably never even have in a bar, you know. Because you're probably not going to have a Persian woman, a Dominican baseball player, and a guy from Texas go to the same bar, right?
Right. And as we had that thing with the PBS with the
Tanzania is an island where they took out a satellite internet system, a Vive, and then our software to a tribe in off of the coast of Tanzania, Africa. Never even seen a laptop. Put them in VR and Roomy and connected them to some kids in Nashville.
A bunch of students in a school. Yeah.
So you get kids in VR that have never seen a computer connected with kids in Nashville.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
I wasn't there. I was in Brazil. It was all done by a PBS crew, like a crew that does a show for PBS. So.
Nice.
Yeah. So we're just waiting on. I haven't
seen anything. It's not officially released. They're still editing
it. Released yet.
How cool is that? Like, kids who have never seen a laptop get to put on this and get to be connected with someone around the world who's very different from them, different technologies, but it's really connecting. It feels like face-to-face.
It does. And what you bring up, the point of anonymity with human, you have the anonymity of the internet, right? But you're not which gives people some courage, right? You get your, internet courage.
But it feels more real.
But it humanizes. Yeah. It humanizes with that anonymity. Like, you could be in Rumi, you could be whoever you want. Like, you have green skin, your little avatar, whatever. But you're the human still driving that.
Yeah, you're still hearing the actions, audio, the inflection, the body language.
Pulling up your life and being, look, I'm human like you. And then, you know, I think that that's real powerful.
And so on the internet where just text rules, right? It's easy to be a troll. You don't feel like you're dehumanizing anybody. But as soon as it's in VR, you feel like, you know, there's people that'll troll online that aren't necessarily a-holes in real life, right? They're kind of that borderline. They're just, you know, some alpha dude just wants to have fun, right? Those people typically will just not troll in VR because they're like, oh, this is like real life. I shouldn't be an asshole, you know?
Yeah.
So well, there's also stuff you could do, like in the classroom, I can just go like mute.
Yeah, well, the thing about Rumi,
I have tools there.
But in Rumi, it's not a problem at all because everyone within your organization is people that have been invited.
Right, but I still have classrooms.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have classrooms with a bunch of online students who could be in their, you know, they could be in their living room with the TV blaring, with completely in their underwear. Right, I don't know, but it seems like they're well behaved. So you bring up a really interesting point of, even though it's virtual avatars, people still have the feeling that they're in the presence of someone and they should act
more human.
Act more human, yeah. It's a very, like I said, the exciting places on this and the stuff that we're going to find out, we're just at the beginning of this. You know, we've talked about therapy. We've talked about do people feel more comfortable with an avatar versus with a, you know how you use a puppet for a kid sometimes to talk to it, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, like that, it's possible that people who have anxiety issues and stuff like that don't want to leave their house. They could get therapy through this medium, talking to an avatar in a safe place where you could go. Like, there's all these cool things that we can explore using this stuff. So,
and the great thing about VR, there's actually a study that came out of a college in Maryland recently that's showing that, I forgot the percentage of retention, but people basically remember things way better in VR because you're experiencing it, right?
Yeah.
And so when I think about something I did in VR, like if I played a VR game, like a military simulator, when I think of that, it's like remembering a dream that I had because there's visual memory, you know, and it's like I was there. I was in that environment.
It also has a lot more tactile similarities to instead of pressing button on.
Yeah, you walk. This, you actually bend down and pick something up.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. So
and that's the great thing about that is the older generations will pick it up sometimes quicker than the younger generations, because some of the younger people in VR are like, what button do I press to pick that up? When someone older is like, I'm just going to bend down and pick that object up, you know? So it's a much, the experience, the UX, the user experience is much better than, say, like a Skype or video conferencing where it's like finding the right buttons. No, you just do things like you do in real life. You talk. If I want to talk to you, I don't have to like click on you. I just turn my head slightly to the left and talk, you know?
Right.
So I definitely see the future of VR, and I'm excited what you guys are doing with Rumi and Doghead Simulations. Chance, one last question. With Doghead Simulations, how did you come up with the name for that? Like, what's the origin? Because you have a really cool logo, and you guys can see this in the show notes. It's a dog,
yeah, VR headset. Yeah, that's actually my dog, Anderson Pooper.
Anderson Pooper.
He's the one I have to rescue from Brazil next month.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was actually a club I had in fourth grade. It was just a goofy club that I had in fourth grade, and I've stayed in touch with the three other main friends I had in fourth grade for my whole life, and we just reminisce about it, and it just was something that came up. People like dogs, put a dog in a VR headset. It's a lot catchier than, like, here's just another tech logo, like a really fancy font with some cool techie stuff. Like, let's have fun. Like, we're pretty much, for the most part, like, well, we're 80% game developers in this company, and we're used to, we don't come from the educational business background. It's more of the fun, more lighthearted. So we just decided to go a little more fun with our logo and our name.
Awesome. So from a fourth grade,
and we have these awesome shirts, which I should get you one.
Yeah, I should definitely get one of those shirts. I agree. But yeah, so this is really fun. So from, you know, from being a student to teaching at Full Sail, to building games yourselves, to teaching other people to build games, and now you guys are taking all of these experiences and building technologies that help connect humans to humans for education, for sales opportunities, for training, and you guys have packaged this in to a company called Rumi.
So yeah, Doghead Simulations.
Software
called Rumi.
Software called Rumi. Got it. So if people want to learn more about this or maybe see how this could fit in their business or education, like, where could people go to find you guys?
Well, you go to dogheadsimulations.com, and there's a link directly to the Steam download. If there's any gamers out there, you guys have Steam, I'm sure. Or you go to roomy.net, you can download it off our website. And it's actually free to create a team, and you can add as many team members as you want, but it's going to be limited to three people inside the same room at the same time before you have to pay. But for testing it out for small businesses, that's a great start. So,
and I also want to mention that we've been talking about VR. You don't need the VR headset to use this. It actually works on just the desktop. You can join meetings in desktop. You can actually join it on the Android. I think iOS is out
now. Soon it'll be out now.
But you can join on your phone, on desktop. So if people are thinking the barrier to entry and they don't want to try it, it's because they don't have this VR setup or like this headset or any things like that. You don't need it. Just go check it out and see if it's almost all of the features that you would use, some of the 3D features because you don't have hands and the ability to use them. Some of those aren't available. But another cheap alternative is the Oculus Go, right?
Yeah, $200. Go out and get one now, because for $200, it's a great little guy.
They've got to be losing money like crazy.
I bet they're like losing at least $50 a pop.
It's for $200, it's amazing, and you can get a lot of VR experience if you're interested in VR. But again, don't let that stop you checking this out. A lot of the features just on your desktop.
It's time to get away from Skype. Start using Roomy.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's great.
And you can also, just before we go, you can follow us at Doghead Sims on Twitter. And I'm Chance Glasgow on Twitter. You do Twitter?
Justin Gallo, no.
Justin Gallo.
No Twitter.
Don't follow
us. Fly under the radar.
I don't even have
Instagram. So.
we'll put all these links on how to find out more information about you guys. We'll put it in the show
description.
Notes.
Nice.
Yeah, so you guys could, if you're driving, please drive safely, but you could go to the show notes inside this podcast or on the website, click on the links, and immediately go to the website.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to propaganda your podcast then.
Do some more name drops. Yeah. No, but this is good. I really appreciate you guys connecting with us. I love seeing Orlando entrepreneurs, do some amazing stuff. And I really hope for that $1 billion-plus exit.
Hopefully.
We can have this conversation down the road. So, ladies and gentlemen, listening into this podcast, we're here live at, or recording at least, at Full Sail University with Chance and Justin, with Doghead Simulations, with a product called Roomy. I hope you've enjoyed this. I hope this has been valuable to you. If you want to experience their product, you can go to the link in the website and check it out for yourself. So I hope you guys have a wonderful day. Keep on building amazing stuff and stay in Orlando after you build it, sell it, and get funded. So.
Awesome.
We'll talk to you all soon. See you on the next episode.
All right, see ya.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.